This is basically a stalemate over COVID funding for the pandemic response.
We know Congress has passed several COVID relief packages that the administration wanted. What was the holdup this time?
There was some frustration among lawmakers, Democrats in particular, about not being brought into consultation by the White House early enough.
For months, we have been engaging Congress about our needs for additional COVID response funds.
Top that off with concerns about bringing Republicans on board for additional funds.
They want to spend an additional 15? Give me a break.
Those consequences are dire.
It's a little chaotic.
I'm Annie Reese. This is Politico Dispatch. White House reporter Adam Kankren has been covering the COVID finger-pointing.
Would you believe that nobody thinks that this standoff is actually their fault? Never happened before in Washington, D.C., I know.
Classic. The White House asked for $22.5 billion in COVID funding. Last week, Congress came to a bipartisan agreement to provide $15 billion. But so far, the number passed into law has stalled at zero. So on the show today, how the White House and Capitol Hill are hoping to secure the funds and what is going to happen when they run out of money.
What's at stake here is whether or not, essentially, we continue to have a response at all, whether there continue to be vaccines available, treatments available, and sufficient testing. And what has happened here is that the White House asked a few weeks ago for about $22.5 billion to kind of keep those core medical needs going.
Mm-hmm.
It looked like we were all set to approve about $15 billion. Of course, it wasn't ideal, but at least it's something. Last week, until at the last minute, there was a revolt in the House among Democrats over essentially how we were going to pay for that. And what it has devolved into now is a fight over how exactly we're going to get this funding through, whether it's going to go through, and in Republicans' minds, whether this is even needed beyond, kind of what the government has on hand right now.
What was Biden's biggest argument to Congress for where the funding went and why it had been insufficient? Because that's the Republican message right now, right? Is there sort of like, well, show me where the funds have been allocated?
Sure. And to be fair, there's been a lot of money allocated toward the pandemic, as you might expect, going back to the Trump administration. Where that money has gone has been a lot of places, right? We've had economic aid programs. We've had direct payments to Americans. If you remember that, we've had the child tax credit, right, which gave monthly allowances to parents of children. Where the money has gone more recently has been to stockpiling supplies that went into combating these various variants that we've faced. So Delta, Omicron came right afterward, and we didn't kind of expect another variant to come that quickly. And so you saw a big ramp up in testing again. You saw a lot of vaccines going out the door. And most importantly, you saw the development of these new kind of novel treatments, right? Ones that if you get COVID, you can now go out and take, and they reduce your risk of ending up in the hospital or even dying.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is all that costs money, and you need to pay that money up front if you want supplies to come through when you need it, right? So we're talking here in March about money and orders that need to be placed to make sure we have enough supplies in July, right? Or in September, when odds are, we may see another variant, we may see another surge.
And then to go back to House Democrats, which you talked about, on the night that this bill was going to pass, they revolted because the money was actually going to come out of funding for their states, right? But now there's no funding.
It's been kind of interesting to watch how Democrats have handled this, because on the one hand, look, this is actually, Republicans standing in the way of things, right? If 10 Senate Republicans just agreed to say, we passed COVID aid without any kind of spending offsets for 2 years now, let's just continue doing that, then this would not be an issue, right? There would have been no problems and wouldn't have to worry about any of the pay for issues. And what I have been told by the White House and in my reporting there is that they have tried to supply Republicans with everything they've asked, right? They've shown them tables and data showing, individual accounts and how much money is left in each one. But for whatever reason, that hasn't been enough for Republicans in the Senate. And on the Democratic side, this again has kind of become a political issue here where the original proposed pay for was going to be taking money from aid that was meant for states and localities. Mm. And that became an issue the day before passage because suddenly you had all these governors saying, wait, we had plans for that money. If you take it from us, we're going to be, you know, left in a bad way. And ultimately, Democrats, a lot of the Democrats who would be, have had their constituents affected, decided it was better to hold off on the COVID funding now nationally than, you know, face angry phone calls from the governor and all these state leaders over the fact that they just gave up money for their own home state.
Mm-hmm. But now it would have to be a standalone spending bill, right? So like the original ask is 22.5, then it was 15. We're currently at zero. How much would a standalone spending bill be? And what's the difficulty of passing that?
This is the question. And this is the thing that the White House tried to kind of hammer home with Democrats was, you know, we're at 15, right? And at this point, it's a decision between 15 or nothing at all. Right now, what's happened is that Democrats have given up any leverage they had, right? If you remember, the $15 billion package was supposed to be part of a broader government funding bill. It had emergency aid for Ukraine, right? So there was a big incentive to get that done. Now, there's none of that urgency anymore, at least among Republicans. Hmm. You have to pass this as a standalone bill, which means that you need to somehow figure out 60 votes in the Senate. And that means compromising with Republicans. And what has made that more difficult is that Republicans have now kind of changed their demands from being satisfied with having this $15.6 billion partially paid for to now saying, actually, we're not even really convinced you need the money, but at minimum, it needs to be paid for in full. So you have this search now for additional offsets that nobody has really been able to settle on as of yet.
And so in the meantime, before any additional COVID funding gets approved, what are the consequences? You've talked about some of those, but could you just kind of really drill down into some of them?
Yeah, the consequences are really immediate and honestly really concerning. You're talking about stockpiles of treatments and vaccines running out literally within months, right? So the White House has said that their testing capacity will start declining this month. They'll have to start scaling back or ending programs by the end of the month. One of those is a program that made sure providers were paid for giving free treatments and free care, COVID care, to uninsured patients, right? So that fund and that program would end. In May, the projection is that the administration will run out of monoclonal antibody treatments, which have been touted by Republican and Democratic governors alike as being really key treatment tools for those who are at risk of becoming severely ill. So those are just gone and off the table. Mm-hmm. You're talking about, you know, treatments for people who are immunocompromised and most at risk running out in the summer. And then, you know, a few months later, you're talking about real concerns about whether we will have enough vaccines for all Americans if a second booster is needed, if there is another surge, and now suddenly there's a lot of demand again for vaccines.
Yeah.
And we have honestly never been in that position before.
And as you mentioned, we know that Pfizer has recommended a fourth shot, a second booster for adults 65 plus. The administration said they'd already purchased vaccine doses that would account for that number of people. But if everyone needs a booster, like you're saying, the administration might run out of money. What would that look like? You know, would insured people then be paying for a vaccine? Do we know what that would actually look like in practice?
It's a good question, and one I don't think we have a clear answer on right now. And I know that one that the administration is trying to figure out as well. If you remember, we may have to do a second booster, right? A fourth shot, essentially. Mm-hmm. And that would be for, you know, at least 65 plus, potentially at some point, you know, all American adults. Mm-hmm. And we also have, at some point, vaccines for children under five, which has not yet been authorized yet, but which, you know, everybody expects we will see by April or May. So when you think about, you know, that stockpile, it's a matter of having enough vaccines for, you know, children, for higher risk Americans, and potentially for all of us at some point. And the real question is less if and more just a matter of when, based on what the scientific data turns out.
I think one of the interesting things here is that, like, there have been many trillions of dollars spent on this global pandemic, like understandably. But at what point does the conversation need to be at all about tapering spending, or at least like if this is something that is going to continue as it seems it is, it can't only be this like these emergency allocations?
Absolutely. If this situation hasn't, you know, hammered it home, I mean, I both, you know, folks in the administration and lawmakers understand that at some point, you know, a more sustainable solution will have to be found, right? You cannot continue to use emergency supplementals to just kind of continue throwing money at it. And ideally what that looks like, right, is more sustainable funding streams for public health agencies, for public health preparedness. The problem, at least politically, is that there's a great desire in this country to never have to worry about the pandemic at all, or just not even to think about it, right? It feels like things are good, so let's not worry about it. And that has really kind of taken hold in Congress as well. The problem is, as soon as we get another variant, everybody's going to be running around asking why we weren't better prepared. And that is kind of the dilemma politically that we face right now.
Adam Kankren, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thanks. Always fun.
Also in the news, the Federal Reserve on Wednesday raised interest rates for the first time since 2018, and officials projected at least six more increases might be needed this year as they move to curb inflation. The quarter point increase is the first since the Fed slashed rates to zero at the start of the pandemic. And New York City Mayor Eric Adams rolled out a controversial new NYPD unit dedicated to getting guns off the streets, fulfilling a campaign pledge to revamp and revive a team that was disbanded in 2020 over concerns about police brutality. Today's episode of Politico Dispatch included music composed by the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. Be sure to follow Politico Dispatch if you haven't yet, and if you can, leave us a rating and review. It helps more people find the show. I'm Annie Reese. Thanks so much for listening.